हरिः श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 31. Remembrance of Krishna is awakened not only by hearing his glories and the glories of his land Vrindavan, but also by direct physical contact. Vaishnavas can physically touch Krishna's glories in the form of the book Srimad Bhagavatam. They can hear about Sri Vrindavan Dham from the Bhagavatam, and then, if fortunate enough, they can come to Vrindavan to bathe in the dust on which Krishna and his dearmost devotees have walked. Okay, so that is... Okay, that's from whether by speaking, thinking, hearing, or physical contact. If any person in this world comes in touch even once with these pastimes of yours and is convinced of their importance, may he be endowed eternally with the power to worship your feet in pure love, feet resplendent with the saffron dust from the pitcher-like breasts of the blessed gopis. So if anybody is hearing, chanting, remembering, thinking, or actually coming in contact with the Lord and his Dham, then everything becomes, then Narad Muni's blessing that he's asking for is may they eternally be able to worship the Lord. Right, so done.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so by Narad Muni's grace, and we can get somewhere.
Yes.
145, Sri Pariket said, Lord Gopinath then extended his divine lotus hand, and with great respect for Narada blissfully said, so be it. Krishna extended his right hand, the hand normally used to offer benedictions. Narada wanted explicit verification from Krishna. Therefore, Krishna showed his consent in such a way that no one could fail to understand. When Krishna enjoys his pastimes as Gopinath, the lover of the gopis, he reveals the most confidential desires of the heart. And in the same mood as Gopinath, he hat the life?
What?
Happily. You have happily?
Yeah.
I have he, the life heir of Putana, and breaking the cart, which said.
Oh,
I got two of the same page.
Oh. Another one of those.
Okay. Okay. He happily accepted Narada's two requests. 146. The sage was suddenly plunged into a vast ocean of supreme bliss. He sang and danced in various ways, thus delighting Lord Krishna. Anybody missing this page?
No.
Okay. Huh? You also have double. Who's missing?
Yesterday
was saying that she was missing. So again, give her this one.
Maha page.
Huh? Says I had two of them.
Okay. It all works out.
Yeah. Okay. He sang and danced in various ways, thus delighting Lord Krishna. Only an ecstatic devotee by the unique power of Prema Bhakti can give pleasure to Lord Krishna. Krishna is full in his own ecstasy, so an ordinary person, anxious and miserable as he is, can never presume to do anything that can please the Lord. Because Krishna's already Atmarama, he's already fully satisfied. So there's nothing that you can do to make him more satisfied unless it's based on the platform of spiritual exchange. Right? Because mundane just doesn't work with him. right?
Prema is just the standard.
Yeah, it's like that. So the position of liberation, even though it's spiritual, is still not going to please him, because he is the unlimited form of spiritual. He is Sat, right? So he is the existence of everything. So that for him is just normal, you know. And so he has unlimited Sat, and we have 1/10,000 the tip of the hair Sat.
Yes.
So it's not going to work out. There's nothing dynamic there. But when there's relationship between the Lord and the devotee, and that's based on expressing the affection between the Lord and the devotee, now that catches his attention. Yeah. So that he's pleased with. Is that really sense? Yeah. So that's the only thing. Narada joins Krishna for lunch, 147 to 149. Narada then partook of excellent food and drink with the two lords, as Devaki and Rohini supervised and Rukmini served. Right, so then you know, Krishna and Balaram, they sat down to eat lunch, because that was the whole... They needed to... One is they needed to have an excuse to leave the room, because Krishna was going to talk to the queens. And it wasn't just a continuation of the pleasant conversations, you can hang around. It was going to be... He's going to be chastising them. And so then... The chastisement needs to be there, but you can't be there. You understand? Because then, instead of being focusing on the chastisement, they will focus on the embarrassment of being chastised in front of somebody. So it's not going to have any effect.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, the smart person leaves.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, even though you would like to, yeah, I told you so, and all that, it won't have any effect. You know, maybe you'll get some satisfaction, but it won't have any effect. So that's why in the culture, then everybody finds a reason to go somewhere. Right? And so now, then, because they needed to change the mood, because Krishna could go to back into this Brajabhav, then, you know, they bring out lunch and, you know, change the whole thing, and Narad Muni's there, so it turns into a whole thing of the Lord and the devotee, or, you know, the thing of taking care of the sage, and this kind of thing. So it functions more on the Dwarka nature, right? Like that. The formality, the opulence, all these different things. And so now, you know, everything comes back into balance. And so Devaki and Rohini supervise, because you have to be watching the plates. You see what's going on, and you see what's missing. You know, what are they eating, like that, what goes with what. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So someone has to serve, and if it's the small thing, then they can do themselves. They'll observe and serve. But sometimes when you're doing a bigger thing, then it's good to have those who are watching and then those who are serving, because then you can say, hey, give this or give that, because there's something you see. You're doing something for Krishna and Balaram needs something. So, you know, then instead of you having to go there, you know, go get the next thing, see, go back, they've already told, right? So it works very smoothly. It's a very nice, nice situation. Is that?
Yeah.
Invited by Balaram and Krishna to take lunch with them, Narada was served excellent sweet rice and other delicious dishes and various refreshing drinks. Since Rukmini was the first of Krishna's queens, she claimed the right to serve the meal. She went around to each of the three people eating and repeatedly offered a small portion of whatever they wanted. Right. Because otherwise, then, you know, it's not going to work if you have 16,108 servers and three people.
No.
It won't even work if you have 8 servers and 3 people.
No.
Right? So therefore, then she claims the right, because she's the first queen. Does that make sense? So whenever there's queens, there's more than one. The first one is the main one. And then there can be another 7. And then they're the main of if there's any beyond that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's just like you hear with... here, so 16,108. So the 8 are main. And then you have the 16,100. Right? So they're all wives and everything like that. But when it comes to the formality, public formalities and these things, then these 8 are the primary. And if it's something reduced, then the main queen is the primary.
Yes.
Right, so there always has to be this hierarchy.
Yeah.
There's not, it won't work. Is that?
Yeah.
So it's just yes.
Is there also hierarchy among the eight main queens?
Probably by when they get married. I would expect. Well, there'll be some way they work it out. Like that. That's that they have amongst themselves. They have their methods. You know. Yeah, that's something means. You have means the man has to worry about that the primary queen that is if there's a problem between her and anyone else, she has to get preference. Right? That's why it didn't go well with Dhruva Maharaj. Because his mother, though she was actually the primary queen, another queen, the king, was putting in the position of primary. So that shouldn't have happened. So that's why the whole thing wasn't working. Right? With that. And then the other thing, they'll work out. You don't have, that's their business. You don't get involved.
Specifically, don't get involved.
Yeah, like that. Yes.
So this hierarchy thing, is it only for ladies or for men it's the same?
Men, but it's not as, it's more unspoken and all that. But the women, it has to be very obvious it's there. Once it's obvious it's there, no one talks about it. But it must be there very, very strongly. Because that'll be a mistake. But at the same time, as you have to be able to appreciate all, like we were reading, that the king in the evening, after the time in the court, he goes into the inner chamber, but in the general area where all the queens are. Then he has to be able to say something glorifying each one of them that's unique to them. But also in the same way is that the others won't get jealous. And we can see is this is something regularly done. So that means, 25 times 365. That's how many new things you have to come up with.
Yes.
So if you're overwhelmed with that, stick to one. Then you only have, you know, times 8. 25 years times 365 days times 8. That's a huge number. Yeah. So you have to, that's the thing. So, because that means you're paying attention. Because if you say the same thing over and over again, that means you're not really paying attention, or it's not important. So that's why kings, they have that power, they have that,
Shakti.
Yeah, that Shakti, that, you know, that mode of passion, that it's worth the effort. You know what I'm saying? To maintain yourself, you're managing a whole kingdom. You know, when you could just have a job down at the corner store, right? So therefore then, you know, it matches. Yes, that works out. Yes, no. But men means for management's sake, men have to have a hierarchy. But in personal, it's not as important. But for the women, in the personal, it has to be there.
Is it more of a social thing?
Yes. Because it's more of an ashram aspect. Because women function from ashram. Then, for necessity, they'll work within varna. But it's still an extension of ashram. Just like the man runs the business, it's about the mechanics of economics. But for the woman, it's her business, and anybody involved is hers. Right? Like that. So it's different. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. 148. Uddhava suggests, just like if a man does expect that and makes it very obvious, then other men kind of think it's not quite proper.
Absolutely.
It's a little over the top.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
You know? Like that. But if the women do like that, then anyone intelligent accepts it and, you know, steps back. Yeah, surrenders, steps back, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, how do you say? For the women, you only have to worry about getting scratched from one direction. right? For the men, they'll get from both directions. So, yeah. So, yeah. Okay. 148. Uddhava suggested to Narada what was best to eat. Satyabhama fanned him, and the other queens pleased him with various kinds of service. Right, because you have the different things, what goes together and everything like that. So it's a standard method. Is that because one is you may not know the particular cuisine or the particular, you know, how you say, the particular person's, how they're cooking, you know, or whatever it may be. So you may suggest that this goes with this, that will be very nice and everything like that. So then Uddhava's pointing that out. Right, Satyabhama then is fanning Nard, right? Because being number two, then she gets the next spot. Right there. Uddhava went around commenting, "You haven't tried this. This other preparation is your favorite. Take some of this and some of that." Since the weather was quite hot, Krishna's beloved Satyabhama personally fanned the two lords and the exalted sage. The other queens, headed by Jambavati, busied themselves doing everything they could to make the meal a pleasure. So there you got your answer. Right? Because you have Rukmini, then number two does the next thing. So then number three is the head of the rest. So whoever's in that position, it's their head of the rest. So on the first one, Rukmini's the head. Then you go into the second position, Satyabhama's the head. Then the third one, then Jambavati. So, yeah. They poured cool water from brimming pitchers, eloquently praised the food, fanned the bodies of Krishna, Balaram, and Narad from all sides, and kept the room fragrant by burning agaru and other incense. So there's so many things that can go on, right? We're just thinking it's just, back to our microwave. Yeah. But it's a whole experience, and it's about the other person's experience. It's not about your own. Sometimes when you travel around, you get somebody who, they just want to get the mercy by serving. So it's not actually about serving, it's about getting the mercy. So they give something, want to see what's the reaction, and they want to start a whole chain reaction of interest, but they're not worried about if you're eating or not. Like that. And then especially if the whole family does that, then you just don't get anything to eat because everybody's so busy trying to squeeze out of it what they can. So you see here is that everybody's involved, but everybody's adding something.
Or you get like a ton of prasadam because
that's another thing, but that's just because they don't know. But what I'm saying here is that they're doing to please. Yeah. So many things are going on, but it's to please rather. So many things are going on so that you'll notice and say, oh, that's very nice. Yeah. Right? Because during the meal, you don't do that. After the meal, that's when you sit and this was nice, that was nice, and thank you for this, thank you for that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise then it gets distracted.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is quite simple because in 2-3 verses it's all covered, but somehow it's really difficult, you know, to take prasadam sometimes.
Because probably there's a good chance that these three verses people just go through and not even notice. But you see here is that in all it means a detail of anything other than the specifics as far as this is the only one where it gave real detail. And then in Chaitanya Charitamrita it's the same thing, is that the detail on prasad, serving prasad, eating prasad is always brought out because it's a very major aspect of the culture. Right. And so if that's appreciated, that would make everyone so comfortable. Right? These other social issues are only because there's no culture. Right? Because if we look at it, here's culture. What's it based on? That trying to please the other person. So it's based on the selflessness. Right? So that's inherent. But what you see is that service. But generally when we come to the modern social issues, we're only dealing with the principle itself. So it's impersonal. What is the application? What does it look like? You know, saying like that. Everybody should be cared for. So what does that mean? What does that look like?
Some social office.
Yeah, so that's the thing is, yeah. So then you have an office you can stand in line and, you know, put in your grievances.
Where's the care?
Yeah, so like that. You know. So that's the difficulty is that it goes back to that, and they're discussing these principles, which are higher principles, and they are the basis of the social environment. But the problem is, in Pranamoy, there's no set or specific system of expressing it. Therefore, everybody has their idea of what's, you know, it's just like you sit down to eat, and someone, out of their concern, you know, for your health, even though it's something they cook, they don't like you eating the things. Oh, it's too salty, or it's fried, or it's this, or it's that, or, you know, you can't eat.
But here it's mentioned they glorify the food.
They're glorifying the food, right? Because that's the whole point, is that, you know, it's cooked in ghee, you know, rather than in, you know, mustard oil. Or it's eggplant, it's cooked in mustard oil. So, you know, like that. So, like that. You know, so it's the glorification is there, or this is very nice, or, you know, or the uniqueness of it, or, you know, we got this from this place and brought it, or, you know, some specialness, you know. Like that, you know, it's done with saffron. Oh, we got this from Spain, or we got this from Iran, or we got this from, you know, somewhere else, or, you know, we found it in the closet. We don't know how long it's been there, but hey, Krishna's mercy.
Yes. You
know? So the idea is to make it inspiring that people want to eat. Like that. So nowadays, much of the time, you're just talking about how healthy it is rather than, you know, the inspiration to eat and stuff like that. So that's the problem. Yeah. After the sage finished eating and washed his mouth, Lord Krishna worshipped him, anointing him with fragrant oils and adorning him with flower garlands and very varied ornaments. Because then afterwards is that, especially when it's warm, then there's chandan and garlands like that. That's a standard, you know, part. You have it in the puja, right? If you're doing more elaborate puja, then after eating, then washing the hands, mouth, and feet, then there's chandan and garlands offered, like that, tambulam, and then like this, it goes on. Narada returns to Prayag, 150 to 153. Narada then took leave of Madhava, Lord Krishna, and went to Prayag thinking, let me bestow perfection on the sages who have waited so long for me to return. Krishna is called Madhava because he is the moon that arose from the ocean of the dynasty of King Madhu. Madhava is also the name of the deity of Krishna at Dashwamedha Ghat, where Narada had seen the sages worshipping the Lord and bathing daily at the confluence of the Jamuna, Ganga, and Saraswati. During the month of Magh. Yeah, because this bathing at Magh, this is also part of the... means generally, the minimum is you're bathing at Kartik. But actually, the full kind of brata is Kartik, Magh, and Vaishak. These 3 months. You know, like that. So that considered together. You know, one is boiling hot, the other one is freezing cold, and the other one is pleasant. So you get all three flavors. Right. And then also when there's a Purushottam month, you're bathing then. So that's considered, you know, the taking bath, unless you're taking bath every day. But otherwise, if it's only, you're only going to select and then make that effort occasionally, then these are the vratas. So that's why I mentioned they're taking bath in the month of Magh. And it also points out that if it's Magh, it's cold up in Prayag, in Varanasi. But in Dwarka, it's not. Like that. Narada wanted to return to Prayag to share his realizations with those sages, who, by taking shelter of Dashwamedha Ghat, had obtained the shelter of Krishna. 151. Thus Narada started on his journey to Prayag, intoxicated with eagerness for pure devotion. Wherever he passed, he vibrated his veena and blissfully sang the glories of the Krishna bhakti he had seen with his own eyes. When the sages at Prayag heard the wonderful account from the mouth of Narada, they once and for all gave up all interest in everything other than Krishna's service, for they were able to grasp the essence of what is of value. So that was what was mentioned about the intelligent, who can see things as they are. They just take that. So this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls saragrahi, being able to take the essence. Because otherwise, in here, we've seen all these levels of endeavor in different forms. But the essential point of all of them, mm-hmm. as Krishna pointed out, is that devotion to Krishna, always hearing, chanting the Lord's glories in the association of devotees. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's what's going on in all these levels. But we're seeing externally, then there's, you know, pleasantly, you know, gathering a nice following, having a whole city involved or a whole kingdom involved, having the universe involved, having even more of the universe involved, and then not caring about the rest of the universe if they're involved or not. You know, that, like this, you're going on through all these. So, entering a mood of great and single-minded humility, they began worshipping the lotus feet of Sriman Madan Gopal according to Narada's instructions. It is an axiomatic principle of devotional science that until one rejects everything insubstantial, one cannot grasp the essence of reality. Right? So at least one should have that idea, right? At least be adjusted with the idea that there is nothing in the material world, either on the platform of karma or jnana. So that means up to liberation, there's nothing of value. At least even if we don't realize it, there's at least the theory that, yes, we're agreeing to this. We accept this.
Yes. Right?
Then we'll get some realization. Like it says, even if you get a small amount of Krishna's mercy, mm-hmm. then there's so much benefit. But it's pointing out that that full form of mercy is when there's that full surrender. So if we just accept it, we'll get benefit. Right? And then from there, you know, slowly all these different attachments that we may have, then they'll start to get less and less. You know?
Yes.
Like that. So it's like Prabhupada gives the example of the poisonous snake. If you remove the fangs, it's not dangerous anyway. It's still a poisonous snake, it's still just as nasty, but it can't bite you. So that's how the material goes. It just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The sages at Prayag, graced by Narada with ultimate enlightenment, now obtained the total humility, dānya, required for entrance into the mysteries of prema bhakti. Because without humility, if I think I'm great, it's not going to work, because it's about the other person being great. Right? And the other person is great, so anyone connected to that great person is great. Right? So the only one not great is yourself. Right? But then each one thinks that, so it works out.
It works. Yeah.
Mark, you know. It's interesting that the whole thing is without low self-esteem.
Yes.
They don't worry about themselves as much as they glorify the other.
Yes, yes. But it's, yes, because low self-esteem means you're not glorifying anybody, other than the generic, well, everybody's better than me, I'm so useless. But it's not specific.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, but here they're able to appreciate others because they actually understand the position. So it's this is the knowledge. So that's why it's different. In other words, meaning that if one has grown up in these cultural aspects, it's easy to see. Then it's a matter of applying it into Krishna consciousness. Because in the Vedic culture, everyone will practice this aspect of humility. And so that will be, but it will just be pious, because that's just culture. Then you see is that this is to apply to Krishna. So therefore, he says, single-minded humility. Otherwise, that humility is applied in so many areas, you know, social and this and that and so many things. But here now it's just applied into devotional service. So it doesn't mean that the rules and regulations of everything else isn't followed. It's only in support of devotional service. Right? While before, there's so many things you have to be doing and balancing and everything. So yeah, so now it's single-minded, so it's just focused on this. By honestly thinking themselves unworthy of worshipping the personality of Godhead's lotus feet, they earn the priceless treasure of his favor. Pariket advises Uttara to worship Madan Gopal, 154-160. 154-155. Dear mother, you as well should always worship this young cowherd boy. He is the ocean that yields the nectar of the rasa dance, in which the divine gopis fully surround him, entranced by pure love. You should cherish, because otherwise, if you I mean, fully surrounded means can mean there's so many. Fully surrounded also means that everybody wants to be close. Otherwise, somebody's there, everyone can stand on one side in the group. But because of that closeness, then they surround. You know what I'm saying? So then there's more. So from every angle, Krishna is interacting.
Yes.
And Krishna is able to do that.
Yes.
You could, you should cherish the desire to be a servant of these gopis. You should constantly worship him in pure love as they did. And you should dedicate yourself to the Sankirtan of his names. Having finished the story, Prickett Mars is summing up the lesson his mother should learn from it. She ought to absorb herself fully in Krishna consciousness, which in all of its countless varieties derives from and reflects the most perfect love of the gopis who join Krishna in his rasa dance. God in his original form is a young playful cowherd, and this form he enjoys his original pleasure. When the Supreme Lord appears in any other form, that appearance is secondary, manifested to satisfy particular devotees. After hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, Prickett understood this transcendental fact, and to make his mother also understand it, he has recounted this first part of Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Perhaps Mother Uttara, the widow of Krishna's nephew, might feel uncomfortable assuming the mood of the gopis. At least in public. Therefore, Prickett advises her more aptly to strive to become a servant of the gopis. As Prickett here points out, the principal method for becoming a servant of the gopis of Vrindavan is Krishna Nama Sankirtana, immersing oneself in the hearing and chanting the names of the divine cowherd boy of Braja, especially the name Krishna. This is the best means to practice worshipping him in pure love, and is the symptom of one who has achieved the treasure of prema. And so then one wants to glorify the Lord, always be involved in that. So that's the whole thing. That's Sankirtan. Right? The other things then may not be as...
same.
Yeah. Yeah, not as sad. Right? Yeah. 156. So that's why you see us chanting Hare Krishna is the central point of our sampradaya. So sometimes devotees get distracted by other technical points,
yes,
thinking that now I'm more advanced, more developed because of the technical. But actually, the absorption in the name, and here in chanting the glories of the devotees, in the Lord and the devotees, in the association of devotees, that's actually the highest principle, because that's what the gopis do.
And all the technical stuff is only useful in so much that it brings us closer.
Yes, it brings us closer to Krishna. You know, we get purified, we get regulated, we get focused. Mm-hmm. You know, like these. So there, it's all valuable, but it's secondary to the chanting. Mm-hmm. So therefore, some will throw out this and then only keep that. But then, what do you do the rest of the day?
Yes.
If you're only hearing and chanting all day, then great. Fine. You don't have to worry about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's because there's always going to be a primary and secondary. It's no such thing, I'll just keep the primary. Because then that primary has a primary and secondary.
Yes.
You know, so it always... Yes.
Well, what do you mean when you say this is what Gopi did?
This is what Gopi did. Gopi.
He spoke about Hare Krishna Mahamantra, about chanting, and then said this is because...
Because they're always absorbed in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories.
Okay.
Right? That's what all they do. Okay?
And they always remember Krishna.
That comes naturally, but it's about the hearing and chanting. If you hear and chant, you'll remember. But it's not about remembering, because we saw just remembering, that was Prahlad Maharaj. He just sits and remembers. And then he's saying, Hanuman's better because he's doing something dynamic. I just sit and meditate. Is that
the gopis example
here in
the chanting?
Yes.
It's just that the deity is Gopinath and the process is Harinath.
Yes. I cannot describe with my own words even one of the glories of the gopis, any more than a mosquito can swallow Mount Meru. Okay, that's
not happening.
That's a serious example. You know, it's not like, you know, any more than I can swallow a watermelon whole.
No, this is way beyond
a mosquito in Mount Meru. Yeah. Oh, but my spiritual master is fully absorbed in the loving moods of serving Krishna. He can constantly glorify Krishna's names and those of Rukmini and Krishna's other beloved devotees. The gopis were consumed by the expansive flames of the wondrous blazing fire of love for Krishna. My guru chants the names of these gopis and recalls a gopi's distinguishing qualities. He too is touched by sparks shooting forth from the flames of this intense fire, and he at once becomes greatly agitated. Therefore, he has to avoid pronouncing the gopis' names. Right, so that's why you see in the Bhagavatam, he doesn't mention their names. He referred to them like that. Means it's I think the acharyas and the commentaries, they point out when it says that this group of gopis, when Krishna came to the Rasa dance, this group did this, that one did that, and this. And I've seen people say, well, this is these, and gives the names. These are those, they're them. And then why it's like that. But he doesn't. So those who understand, no. And those who don't, then yeah, it's just, you know, it works out. It's nice.
Okay. Need to know basis.
Yeah. The gopi's love for Krishna is unique. It reaches the ultimate extremes of ecstatic intensity, and so it can be compared to a blazing fire. Everything the gopis experience in their lives shines with the light of their Krishna prema, and the flame-like ecstasies from their prema burns their hearts, as flames burn a person who comes too close. Sukadev Goswami is intimately attuned to the mood of the gopis, and therefore is vulnerable to the danger of becoming too ecstatic. In the helpless state of Viraha Bhav, he might sometimes become incoherent in chanting the glories of the Lord, the devotional practice that is his own specialty, and the only support of his vital force. If Sukadev utters any of the gopis' names, his heart is at once filled with remembrance of the gopis, and the scorching flames of Viraha Bhav make him unable to concentrate on his service. Therefore, while reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Prikit, he avoided mentioning the gopis by name. Many times in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev speaks of the activities and ecstasies, but not the names of individual gopis. Quote, some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Right, so it's not like, oh, I'll just finish this and go. They just go.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's the point. They're not worried about the social. So when we get so worried about fitting in the social,
then
wrong sampradaya.
Yes, that's beautiful.
One gopi imitated Putana, while another acted like infant Krishna and pretended to suck her breast. Another gopi crying in imitation of infant Krishna, kicked a gopi who was taking the role of the cart demon Shatakasura. 10:30:15. The gopis began following Krishna's path, as shown by his many footprints. But when they saw that these prints were thoroughly intermixed with those of his dearmost consort, they became perturbed and spoke. So he doesn't say who it is. Right? So the acharyas, they reveal these things. 10:30:26. As the gopis wandered about, their minds completely bewildered, they pointed out various signs of Krishna's pastimes. The particular gopi whom Krishna had led into a secluded forest, when he had abandoned all the other young girls, began to think herself the best of women. Quote, my beloved has rejected all the other gopis, she thought, even though they are driven by Cupid himself. Krishna has chosen to reciprocate with me alone. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:30:35-36. As the two lovers passed through one part of the Vrindavan forest, the special gopi began feeling proud of herself. She told Lord Keshava, I cannot walk any further. Please carry me wherever you want to go. Thus addressed, Lord Krishna replied, just climb on my shoulder. But as soon as he said this, he disappeared. His beloved consort then at once felt great remorse. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:30:37-38. One gopi joyfully took Krishna's hand between her folded palms. Another placed his arm, anointed with sandalwood paste, on her shoulder. One gopi joining Lord Mukunda in his singing sang pure melodious tones that rose harmoniously above hymns. Krishna was pleased and showed great appreciation for her performance, saying, "Excellent, excellent." Then another gopi repeated the same melody, but in a special metrical pattern, and Krishna praised her also. Because that's the thing, you have the melody, then you have the variations on the melody. So that means that there's a melody that's going on. One gopi then makes variations on it in amazing ways, so Krishna's appreciating. Then another way of creating variety is take the same melody and now adjust the rhetorical pattern, right? So like you have to put it into thirds and put it into something unique like that, and then it gives it a different flavor. It sounds like it's totally different, though it's exactly the same.
Yes.
Is that... Ten 33:9. Some gopis felt so pained at heart that their faces turned pale from their heavy breathing. Others were so anguished that their dresses, bracelets, and braids became loose because it becomes thin, so then everything just opens, right? 10:39:14. One of the gopis, while meditating on her previous association with Krishna, saw honeybee before her and imagined that it was a messenger sent by her beloved. Thus she spoke to the bee. 10:47:11. So one might conjecture that reverential aspect for the gopis was Sukadev's reason for not speaking their names. But Parikit here denies this by specifying that Sukadev was Krishna Rasa Vishta, always intoxicated by the spontaneous bliss of Krishna consciousness. It was not out of shyness that Sukadev was reluctant to mention the gopis by name. It was out of fear of losing control of himself, because he's there to speak. And so then he won't be able to speak. So you just avoid. You know, but you don't, because then you'll go farther, because you have to explain that, so you just brush it. So it's enough to understand, but not enough to get overly distracted.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Before it was mentioned that Shukadeva was in a Santa Rasa. So, where he is?
He's a parrot. So the thing about these parrots is there's no pastime they can't be involved in. So he's used to being right there in the center of everything. So even it's after the pastime, let's say Krishna and Radharani are in the Kunj, then he can be there. So in the morning, then he tells all the stories of what happened. And all the gopis sit around and listen. Like that.
Is the Shukra right there?
Shukadeva. Whether he's her parrot or Krishna's parrot, but the point is he's a parrot.
He's a Shukra.
Yes. So they always hear there, so he knows all the details, so he's totally absorbed in that. But he doesn't want to become too ecstatic that he can't discuss it.
So, in any relation with Krishna, on this side, no, it's possible to attain the full effect of the rasa and taste, even if somebody is in different...
No, the point is that appreciation is there. Like you see, Bhishma Dev is appreciating the nature of the gopis. Right, so his relationship with Krishna may be servitorship, but his relationship with the gopis is shanda. Mm-hmm. Right? But he's appreciating. So the point is it's not that doesn't generate ecstasy, because the bud of prema generates ecstasy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So let alone prema itself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the point is you only have 7 days. Mm-hmm. And so you want to explain all this to Parikit Maharaj. So then you, it's just like that.
The focus.
Hmm? Yeah, that pastime with Gadadhar Pandit and his guru. So he thought his guru was it Pundarik Vidyanidhi, because he was a king. So he thought he was a bit of a materialist. But then whoever was with them, who brought Gadadhar Pandit, could understand this, so he recited some verse from Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. And in ecstasy, he, you know, fell off the throne, was rolling around for 6 hours straight, just breaking things and this, just rolling around in ecstasy. Then Garadhar Pandit had to admit, okay. Like that. So, and that was one verse and 6 hours. So, you know, you add that up, you know, it's like, so that means four verses in 24 hours. So that you get through 24 verses. So we have the mini Bhagavatam of 24 verses, you know, or it's actually, no, 28 verses, right? Because 7 days. Like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very essential, right? You know, very. Is that? Yeah, so like that, that absorption in that, and that's his position. So it's not that it's different. It's not important that the difference is there. That's his rasa, you know. But the point is one should aspire after serving the servants of the gopis, not becoming a parrot, right? You don't need, you know, 20 parrots in one kunj. One's, you know, two is enough, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
159. If you follow my advice and with pure love take shelter of the gopis and their master, Lord Sri Krishna, then, O Mother, I promise that by Krishna's mercy you'll be able to understand something of the gopis' greatness. Without first scientifically understanding the special qualities of the gopis that distinguish them from everyone else, one cannot develop the true desire to become a servant of the gopis. Nor, beyond that, can one realize the supreme truth of their ecstatic worship of Krishna. With his idea in mind, Pariksit offers this promise to his mother. In what he had spoken, he could not have explained to her everything about the gopis' glories, nor could she have been expected to understand completely what he had told her. To gradually realize this deep subject matter, she would have to follow the standard process of devotional meditation. First, she would have to begin practicing worship of Krishna while following the footsteps of the gopis, as her son had outlined in his narration. By this practice, she would acquire some partial understanding. That understanding would help her worship become mature, which in turn would allow her to know the transcendental reality in more detail, so that finally she would achieve the perfection of prema bhajan. In this way, by worshipping the Supreme Lord, one comes to know the greatness of the gopis. And by knowing the greatness of the gopis, one advances in worship of the Lord. This shastra, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, declares throughout that pure devotional service to Krishna can be realized only by one who has specific knowledge of both the personality of Godhead and the process of bhakti. Nonetheless, when one has learned the glories of the gopis, the greatest of all the Lord's devotees, one will automatically understand the Lord in this devotional service without any other effort. Because it's about the devotee and the devotional service. That's how we see this particular form of the Lord. Right? So Braja Krishna is seen because of the Brajavasis. Right? Their worship, their affection, and that expression of it. Therefore, then Krishna reciprocate that comes as Braja Krishna.
So
if we want to understand Braja Krishna, we actually have to understand the Braja devotees. Right, you can't understand him separate than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right? Because this is all, I mean, him and his energies are non-different. So you have to understand the Lord and his energy.
Yes.
Right? 160. With the help of this most excellent narration about the Supreme Lord, which shows who has received the essence of the Lord's mercy, one can understand him for certain. Anyone who, for any reason, takes shelter with faith of this narration will quickly attain love for Lord Sri Krishna. Okay, anyone for any reason. Okay, so we have a shot.
We have.
To Pariksit's promise, Srila Sanatana Goswami now adds his own. By taking shelter of the Supreme Lord's devotees, one can understand their special glories, which further leads one to enter particular methods of devotional worship and finally attain pure love for the Lord. This sequence of perfection is wonderful enough in itself. But even more wonderful is that one can achieve the same perfection simply by hearing this Brihad Bhagavatamrita with faith. The purpose of this book is to make known how Sri Krishna Chandra, the original personality of Godhead, acts as the unlimited source of super excellent compassion. Sincere readers will quickly rise to the goal of Krishna Prema, especially when they conscientiously follow the authorized principles of sadhana bhakti. Right, so that's Sanatana Goswami's point, is you follow this. Because he's the Sambandha Acharya. So how to make that connection with Krishna, how to express that relationship. So he's the authority in this matter.
And now we know why.
Yes? Yes. Thus ends the seventh chapter of part one of Srila Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, entitled Purna, the Complete Perfection.